It's Climate Thursday. Each week we take a segment to talk about climate and sustainability issues. And today we're joined by one of our regular and favorite Climate Thursday guests, Ashley Ward from Duke's Nicholas Institute. Ashley, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I appreciate you taking the time to be in here today. We usually start by asking what you've been up to for the last couple of weeks. So what have you been up to for the last couple of weeks?
I just returned from Oregon, working with Oregon state agencies on the new Oregon water data legislation that passed last year. And that was always wonderful to see such a collaborative group of state agencies working together to really resolve and prepare themselves to deal with some of their most challenging water management issues.
So when you're working with an agency like that, what are you actually helping them with?
So in this case, it varies a little bit by what's going on, and specifically based on what their legislature demands of them. So right now, we're helping them work through what it is that needs to happen in order for them to modernize their data infrastructure. So, you know, what is it they need to do? How much is it going to cost? What kind of resources are needed for a report that will go back to the legislature so they can decide whether or not they're going to support it?
And since the last time we spoke, there's been an election that kind of dominated the news. And I thought maybe we could touch on how this election looked from a climate and sustainability standpoint. Are we better off, worse off, or some mix than we were before the election?
Oh, I have so many thoughts. Okay, so in my most optimistic self, can we start there? Because that's always a happy place to be.
That would be great.
I think, you know, first of all, Democrats expected that they would lose control of the House, and most they thought they would lose control of the Senate. And so the big push for a lot of that legislation, the Inflation Reduction Act and the Infrastructure and Jobs Act, you know, those big pieces of legislation were pushed through because of that. So what happens now? Again, in my most optimistic self, what I would like to think is one of two scenarios. One is a reality that climate is not the divisive issue that it has been in the past. Many candidates ran on, you know, we found what you and I have talked about a lot, which is when we talk about climate, we need to talk about actual benefits, investment in communities, and what it means for people. And that's a winning strategy when we talk about climate. And it's something that even Republicans or people who typically would not support climate policy can get behind, right? Because they feel it, see it in their own districts. So my most optimistic self, option one, is that they continue to not impede the implementation of the what has already been passed. Option two is, with such a narrow majority that Republicans have in the House, there's likely to be quite a bit of show and circus that's going to go on. And perhaps that would be directed toward issues like Hunter Biden's laptop or, you know, things like that that they've been concerned about already, and less focused on, you know, stymieing the progress toward implementation on this legislation. Unfortunately, it means the Special Committee on Climate Change is probably going to be sunset, and I personally hate to see that happen. But there are, as I've told you before, 20 or more bipartisan bills in committee right now in Congress that all address resilience in some form or fashion. And if people want to read about what they are, Duke Nicholas Institute released the Resilience Roadmap. And if you just Google Duke Resilience Roadmap, you will see a report. And at the end of that report, it tells you every single piece of legislation that currently is there. And, you know, what I hope happens is the distraction around some of these other issues, like Hunter Biden's laptop, means that perhaps those that are in committee that would like to be able to have something, a feather in their cap to take back to their districts, will get those bills out of committee and maybe we'll still see some progress. Now, that's my most optimistic self. Probably also what will happen is the states are going to have to do a little bit more caring of water on the climate front. And we've seen that already. You know, New York had a big bill that just passed. I wrote it down, $4.2 billion in bonds that will go to addressing climate change, like pollution cleanup, clean energy projects, transitioning their school buses to EVs. California's big bill failed. But, you know, we averted supermajorities in North Carolina and Wisconsin and Montana with Democratic governors. You know, it's going to be great, hopefully, to see that the progress that's been made at that state level will continue. Minnesota and Michigan had big wins for Democrats. I'm very excited to see what happens in Michigan, because the home place of the automobile industry with now Democratic control of all aspects of government, will they be able to shape that investment toward electric vehicles? So lots of reasons to be happy with what happened, and realistic to be concerned on the federal level about how much we can keep going forward.
Our guest is Ashley Ward, a senior policy associate at Duke's Nicholas Institute. And we're talking elections right now, and definitely the storyline was definitely positive for Democrats nationally. At the state level here in North Carolina, that wasn't necessarily the storyline. Are there any concerns about what the climate implications of the state level election were during this midterm?
Well, we have our governor already has established the Office of Recovery and Resilience, and we have a governor that is pro climate policy. One of the things that I think very, very narrowly averted a supermajority in the General Assembly here means that some of the progress that we've seen under Governor Cooper won't be pulled back. It also means that any kind of legislation proposed by our General Assembly that would, you know, say, for example, block the ability of local governments to make rules around and build resilient communities, those kinds of legislative interventions from our General Assembly, the governor can veto. And so I think, you know, again, sort of if you think about what I was just talking about, where we may not have a lot of activity from the federal level for climate change, it's going to fall in the states. In some states, and those like North Carolina, it's going to fall to the local governments rather than real state movement. Do I wish it was different? I certainly do. And, you know, my hope is that over the next coming 2 years, that we can make the case for why these kinds of investments are positive for urban and rural communities throughout North Carolina and gain taxpayer support for what we need, voter support for what we need.
We're speaking with Ashley Ward, and we've been talking politics and elections, but I wanted to talk about something that's actually happening right now in the news, and that is the large international climate crisis, or conference, excuse me. There is a crisis, too.
There is a crisis, yes.
Specifically here, I wanted to talk about the conference, and my question was just, for someone like you, how much attention are you paying to a conference like this? How much is it on your radar?
So I think it's at a macro level, right? So COP27 is happening right now in Egypt, and I have several friends and colleagues who are there. And really, this is about diplomacy around climate action on a global scale. And why is it important? It's important because a lot of times the policies that are developed, say, out of the European Union, actually influence private industry and what happens here in the U.S. We are connected globally through these markets. And so restrictions and different policies that are passed by big markets like the EU actually do have an impact to the U.S. and vice versa, right? And so, you know, I am interested to see what kind of diplomatic headway they make. One of the big challenges at COP27 so far that I've read about this year is, you know, what is the role and responsibility of the so-called developed world in helping finance the, you know, what's needed for infrastructure and recovery for countries in the quote-unquote developing world. And I'll be interested to see how that comes about. There's also a big contingency on climate health at COP every year. I'm always interested to see what kind of agreements they make across governments for not just things like air pollution, but also how do we transition our healthcare delivery system to not contribute to the climate crisis.
We're visiting with Ashley Ward from Duke's Nicholas Institute, and we've got just about a minute left. Is there anything that you wanted to touch on that we haven't gotten to yet?
You always ask me what I've got coming up, so I'll tell you I have one more trip of the year, and that is to New Mexico, where I will be working with legislators in New Mexico, very similar to what we've been doing in Oregon and other places, helping them work through some of the challenges they're facing in modernizing water data infrastructure. So I'm excited for that. And coming up in January, we have a roundtable happening in Miami around disasters and resilience. So I'm looking forward to that.
At first, I was like, only one more trip this year, but there's only like 5 weeks left in this year. It kind of snuck up on us this year.
It did.
Well, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to our next visit.
Great. Always a pleasure.